joining me now are the gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn and New York. They visit us once a month to talk about various matters and take your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And people are already calling in, so there must be some pretty desperate people out there.
We have a following.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that you fill a real need in many people's lives, because I know sometimes I'm really confused about something that's happening in my house. And I think, oh, gee, the gurus were on just yesterday. You have to wait a whole month.
And I like to be needed.
But I also feel that, you know, with the home inspections that I do and consulting, I feel to a certain degree I'm like an owner's manual for a home. Because, you know, you buy a car and you get an owner's manual that's an inch thick. You buy a cell phone, you get something, a nice booklet with it. You buy a home or an apartment or any other piece of property, you get a handshake, a pat on the back, and they say, lots of luck.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having the resource out there, it's, you know, it makes me feel good to help people actually answer some of these problems on a very complicated and sophisticated piece of equipment they own, and they have no clue how it really operates.
It sounds like somebody's cell phone is on vibrate, but I'm hearing an right now. A lot of people are buying Christmas trees and the like, and in the past you've talked about how they can be beautiful, but at the same time, dangerous.
If you're buying a Christmas tree and you're going to bring it into your house, the first thing you do is cut off about 2 or 3 inches off the bottom.
Don't they do that automatically when you buy the thing?
Sometimes yes and sometimes no. That has to be sometimes you buy a tree and you may not bring it into the house next day. In other words, it'll lay outside on the front lawn or in the rear yard. And until you get prepared with all your trimmings and other stuff, thing like that, it'll be like on the lawn. And so what happens at the end, or the trunk at bottom, is going to dry out. And that cuts off the water which goes up into the tree. So you have to cut off 2 or 3 inches and get it into a good sturdy stand with continuous water all the time, because that tree, if it dries out, is really like napalm waiting to be lit.
Well, how do you know if it's fresh when you buy it?
Well, first of all,
you can't just shake it and see if all of those little pine needles fall.
Well, that's actually not a bad indicator, because when you do buy the tree, unless it's already been pre-wrapped, which is also an indicator, which maybe they're trying to unload old trees.
Because I've heard that some people actually cut them down in the summertime and then put them in freezers. Not all of them are
that's
fresh
a cut. Big freezer, especially if it's going to be put up in, say, Rockefeller Center.
Not that tree. You were saying,
but,
Larry, I'm sorry.
But it, more important is that the tree usually has a serviceable life of about 2 to 3 weeks. And I think the more important point is, A, not only keeping it hydrated, but the day after New Year's, it's got to get out of your house.
Yes.
It really does. And for a couple of reasons. One, it's dangerous. Two, there are certain exceptions and dispensations in insurance policies for these trees. And if you leave them up longer than the carrier's period of time and a fire does occur, you're not going to be covered. Because they will say, you didn't pay attention. And you know insurance companies, they love to stickle on those paragraphs where they end up not having to pay. So that's the other reason. Also, make sure that the electrical wiring and the lights that you put on it are in good repair, because the source of the fire may not even be the tree. It may be the electrics and stuff. And by all means, do not use ones that have open flames, as we used to use when we used to burn down houses by the dozens in the 1800s.
And no candles.
That was the point I was
making. No candles.
Yeah.
You also bring a quiz each month, and we have one this month. I'm going to read it.
Mm-hmm.
My turn. Name the linear technique used in architecture, engineering, drafting, and artwork to convert an engineering-type flat plane drawing or sketch into a three-dimensional pictorial image. Our number here, 212-433-9692, if you want to answer the question. If you just want to ask a question, you can give us a call at that number, or you can leave a comment question on our show page at WNYC.org. Please don't send me any email. I have no access to it. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and with me are the gurus of how to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. Larry, you want to say something before we go to calls?
Before we part from the seasonal shrub discussion, make sure your smoke detectors and your carbon monoxide detectors are working for both the tree and all the cooking that you will be doing comes the holiday. So you want to make sure those are all working. So check the batteries and so on.
Should we take some calls?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And our first caller is Charles from Manhattan. Hi, Charles.
Hi, how you doing?
What can we do for you?
Well, I live in a sixth-floor apartment, and in our living room, when I walk around, the floor bounces, everything on the shelves shakes, and I wondered if there's any way I can fix it.
Let me ask you a question. You said you're on the sixth floor of what kind of building is this?
It's an apartment building built back in the mid-30s.
In the mid-30s. I'm kind of I'm suspecting that if you have this kind of bounciness on the floor, and the floor actually noticeably goes up and down.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of thinking that the floor below you, someone took a wall out, and now the floor does not have the intermediate support that it used to have. Because it shouldn't have that much of a moment or deflection for you to actually, as you walk across, for it to actually become spongy or spring-like.
Right.
What you can do yourself, very little. It takes
a lot of work. It can be fixed, but
this is actually a lot of work. This is actually an engineering project that the building itself would have to undertake.
Now, is this dangerous because he doesn't? If there is a wall that
there
was,
there is no. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah,
I've been in the apartment downstairs. They didn't take a wall out. It still has the same arrangement.
Do they have a similar bouncy condition?
That I don't know. They did a total renovation a few years ago, but it was doing this before that.
Okay. I'm not saying that they, in fact, took out the wall. The wall could have been removed years even before that. But for it to bounce like that indicates to me that either it wasn't designed right from the get-go, which is usually highly unlikely. I don't usually see that. If anything, you know, especially when it comes to wood floors and wood structures, they tend to over-design them, even back then. And or someone removed a floor joist or two. Something went on to cause this to occur. But the repair is not really that complicated, but it is an engineering project, and it does mean doing work in the apartment below.
Does it also mean that his floor is insecure? After all, he's had this condition for many years.
Not necessarily. It's almost like a diving board. It'll flex. The
trampoline, it sounds to me.
Yes, but
actually, his analogy of a diving board is better.
It's like a diving board, and you find some houses that will have that shakiness, but it has to be measured to see if it's sustainable, so what's going on, to find out whether the dead load of that floor or the structural of that floor is able to support the live load, which is people walking around and furniture and everything else about it. It takes a calculation, but there are solutions to those kinds of problems that are technical and can be put together to make it straight.
So how does he proceed?
Well, first of all, let me ask you a question. Is this a co-op or a condo?
It's a co-op.
And you own the apartment?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and the floor in your apartment now, is it a finished floor? Is it a nice floor?
Well, it's got to be sanded and refinished,
it's nothing you're looking to rip up or anything.
Not really, no.
Yeah, because this repair would have to either be done from interior of the lower level apartment or the interior of the upper level.
You have to tear up the floor and
or the ceiling, respectively. Yeah. And so this could be done by reinforcing those existing floor joists and putting in more, either sistering the joists or putting in some steel or some.
What they call bridging. They could do either bridging or sandwiching.
So
it's a special technique.
Down.
No, it's not the. If it's just the floor that's moving up and down on the joist, that is a repair you can do. But I think what you're saying, if the whole floor system is bouncy, then this is something that's really an engineering or architectural project. Okay?
Thank you so much for your call. Nikki, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What's up?
About a year ago, I had my home, 1935 Cape Cod, air sealed and insulated. And now the plaster walls of the master bedroom on the second floor are starting to crack. There's hairline cracks all over. And I'm wondering if it's there's trapped moisture or if there's something else going on, and if so, what should I do about it?
Well, it depends upon what kind of cracking, how the cracking looks. There are things called allegation that takes place if, say, the paint that was placed on top of the walls was incompatible with the material that was underneath it. And also,
no, it hasn't been painted in a long time.
It hadn't been painted in a long
this
time.
Only, and you said you insulated the exterior walls?
Air-sealed and insulated the attic.
Air
sealed the exterior walls, not insulated the exterior walls.
That's something that has to be looked at because there are so many different conditions or so many different symptoms that relate to what the problem is that it would have to be figured out because there's separation, there's allegation, there's striation, there's diagonal cracking and all kinds of things, and you have to figure out what is causing that problem.
Well, let me ask a question before. So in other words, you had the exterior of the building air sealed.
Correct.
That was an application of material that they put on the outside of the building?
Actually, they applied it to the inside. They air sealed all the, you know, penetrations from the inside.
So in other words, they made holes in the interior wall surface and
They didn't make holes. They air sealed. They did not insulate. They didn't blow in insulation into the walls. They air sealed the interior walls. You know, they put those little gaskets in the exterior outlets, and they air sealed around the windows and so on.
Okay.
So it seems like moisture is being trapped in the walls now.
I doubt that.
One I doubt, because those air seals are just to stop the penetration of air through the wall, where if the moisture is being trapped in the this would, because in a lot of the situations it wouldn't actually trap the air.
Because it would breathe, wouldn't it?
It would breathe through the outside of the building, and you're saying this building was built in 1930s?
Yes.
Yeah, and what's the exterior surface? What kind of material?
Cedar shake shingles.
Yeah, see, that would actually breathe quite a bit, even though there probably is building material on the outside of the building. And this cracking is happening everywhere?
No, just in this room on the second floor.
And everywhere in the room?
Pretty much, yeah. Mostly around the top of the walls.
That would have to take a visual look at it.
See what's going on.
If you can take a photograph.
Because there's a bunch of things I would do. I would check it with a moisture meter. I would actually, you know, look at the building from the outside. So if you could take a picture of it and if
email
you wanted
to,
and you can email it to me at larry@ubell.com, I would take a look at it and we'll see what goes on from there.
And Ubell is spelled UBELL.
Yes.
Some people don't know that.
Who?
People who write to me sometimes.
Yeah,
Robert from your borough, Larry.
Yeah, it's my borough. I own it.
He says, a roofer suggested removing the shingles and nailing new plywood over the old 3/8 wood. The original wood is 40 years old with some leaks and some separation of the plywood. Mm-hmm. Should he do this and spend more and rip it all off?
We're
getting hard questions today.
Yeah,
aren't we?
Very hard questions.
Those are questions that have to be evaluated by seeing the entire structure and seeing how it's put together. You know, it depends upon whether inside the framing is platform framing, balloon framing, a western framing, and how the framing of the building is constructed in order to make a determination of what goes on
but
the
actually,
inside.
But bottom line, what it really is one has to figure out on this roof system the dead load of this roof is, and whether adding this additional plywood will compromise that dead load. And that can easily be done by figuring out what the dead load is and how much all this wood would weigh. And then, so if the building can actually sustain the load of the new plywood, yes, just nail right on top. But if not, then you have to rip it all off and start over.
Andy from North Carolina asks, what's a safe temperature to set the thermostat to when you know you're going to be away from your house for a weekend to use the least amount of energy without risking frozen pipes?
That's a risky thing because almost every thermostat is regulated that you can't bring it down below the freezing temperature. It stops. In other words, they
actually most of them bottom out at about 50 degrees.
About 50 degrees. You can't. But when you bring it down to that low level, the room in which the thermostat is in will come down to 50 degrees. But if you have a remote room someplace else that's like on the far end or in the corner of the building where the heat loss is most prevalent, that room could have a frost condition that could rupture a radiator or if you have a bathroom in a corner of the room, it could have a...
So how do you protect
those pipes? Here's what you do. You go around your building and you set it to, let's say, 70 degrees or 68, and you go around your entire building and looking what the differential is in those different outer parts of your building and see what the difference in temperature is. Now, if you're in one part of your building, your thermostat is set for, let's say, 70, but you're finding a part of the building is 65, that you have a 5-degree difference. So you don't want to, but you don't want to go where you have it lower. That will start getting into the freezing point. So I'm actually a fan of 55 degrees. That's what I'm a fan.
Yeah,
of.
With 55 degrees, you could be pretty assured that you'll be safe.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for writing in, Andy. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take a little break. A reminder that we do have a quiz in effect, and which one of you wants to read it?
Take care of it. Name the lineal technique used in architecture, engineering, drafting, and artwork to convert an engineering type flat plane drawing or sketch into a 3-dimensional pictorial image.
Okay, and we'll be taking your calls at 212-433-9692 right after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we're back with the Gurus of How To, Al and Larry Bell. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And a number of people have called in with their thoughts about what the answer to the quiz is. And let's go to Josh from Manhattan. Hi, Josh. What do you think it is?
I believe that it's orthographic projection.
No, it is not. We had the word orthographic projection several months back, but this is something different. This is taking like a blueprint, and by the measurements in a blueprint that an architect may make, he can make an actual photograph or a picture of what he intends to build.
Okay, thank you so much for your call.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And Spinel, is that your name?
Yes. Hi.
What do you think it is?
It's called an elevation.
An elevation is a vertical view of a wall or a building of one single dimension. This is a 3-dimensional creation, and has a specific term.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you for calling us. Bill from Williamsburg, you have a problem?
Yes, I have a gas space heater in my kitchen that's fluted out the back wall. And I turned on the pilot light this year. The pilot light went on, but it's wired to a thermostat somewhere else in the kitchen. And when I turn the thermostat, say, up to 90 degrees or 85 degrees, it won't turn the heater. It won't, like, open the valve or whatever it is to kick on the heat.
So the most obvious is the thermostat broken?
I don't believe it is. And then I remember last year, it seemed to take a few days before that kind of either built up some sort of electrical current to allow that gas to go on.
Let me ask you another question. I know you can let me answer this question, right? I'm talking to my father here.
Yeah, okay? They're signaling to each other.
No, he's just sitting there trying to pounce. Let me ask you a question. Does this heater get plugged into the wall anywhere?
No.
Okay. I'm with you. I got you here. What you have there is a gas valve called a power pile. And the way that works is the electricity that actually is produced by the pilot. The pilot light creates enough energy to make a circuit to open the valve. Your power pile is broken.
Well, how long has it been working that you haven't tried it on?
You know what? I put the gas valve on about probably 4 or 5 days ago.
Oh, it should have been working. The other way to test it is if you can take off the thermostat and there are two wires there. If you touch them together and it doesn't work, then you know that the power pile is not producing enough energy make the valve open.
And you have to have a qualified plumber service technician come in and replace it.
Yes.
Okay.
It's called the power valve?
Power pile.
P-I-L-E?
It's a bimetal condition, and what it does is when the two pieces of metal are being heated up, it produces electricity.
But it's called the power pile.
Okay. I'm going to do the test with the two wires. I've done that before.
Mm-hmm. Those, by the way, just on a side note, with those units, they're very easily damaged, and they're very fragile, and they do break and wear out.
Well, also, if the probe of the power pile is not exactly over the pilot light, that may not work also.
That's true, too.
That little device has to be heated up by the pilot light itself.
We have some more people who think they know the answer to the quiz. Robert from Staten Island, hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, what do you think it is?
I believe it's called Plan View.
Plan View is what you're saying. It's a plan that you look straight down at, and it shows you the plan of a layout of a space. But what we're looking for is taking that plan view and converting it into a three-dimensional drawing.
The key word in this phase is three-dimensional.
Now,
that's right.
It seems to me that the answer is obvious, but everybody's looking for something more difficult.
Because you know all these answers already.
Candy, what do you think it is?
Hi.
Yes, yeah. Candy.
I think it's a perspective drawing.
That seemed obvious to me as a perspective. Of course, isn't that how you show space?
Yeah.
Three-dimensional space.
Hi. How
going
did you...
all the way back to Brunelleschi.
How did you know
and
the
you
answer
went to
there?
What kind of school again, Leonard?
I went to art school.
Okay, I'm just making sure we knew this.
How did you know the answer?
My husband is a architectural renderer.
So he uses perspective graphs and things like that in order to create from flat drawings into a perspective.
Well, it puts things into perspective.
He'll take the blueprints and he'll do a perspective drawing. He does it all by hand.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not computers.
Wow.
Oh, then he uses what they call vanishing points. And you could have as many as 10 different vanishing points in order to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
exactly.
It started up with one-point perspective, and then they figured out during the Renaissance that you could have more than one vanishing point.
Well, if you really think about it, you could have thousands of vanishing points. It depends upon how you look at something.
Well, anyway, I'm going to put you on hold, Candy.
Okay.
And then my staff will take all the information about you, your name, address, your Social Security number, how much is in your checking account and all of that.
And you will get...
Go ahead. What are you going
to get? You'll get one of the books that I and George Merlis wrote together. It's called Save Energy, Save Money.
Okay. Fantastic. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for participating.
My husband and I both listen. Oh.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WMIC.org. Don in Poughkeepsie writes, I'd like to insulate my basement, but I'm concerned that the insulation will help to trap moisture in an already moist basement. Mm-hmm. Basement is brick above grade and stone below grade. Is there a method of insulation that will help me prevent moisture and mold from building up, but make my basement retain more of the heat from the furnace, which sits there?
Well, the insulation, actually, especially if you go with fiberglass insulation is more like a filter than it is a seal. So it won't actually trap moisture. It will actually let moisture flow through. That's why sometimes we use vapor barriers. But these days, there's a lot of differing opinions about using vapor barriers, because since we air condition as well as heat in this part of the world, what we do to protect ourselves against heat, moisture penetration, we do 180 degrees the other way for air conditioning. So a lot of – unless you live in extremely cold climates or extremely hot climates where you would never use either air conditioner or heating or little of either one, then just putting in insulation in your basement will not really cause any kind of moisture trap condition.
So, okay.
So you can insulate.
Thank you.
Especially if you use fiberglass or that kind of thing.
Biddy from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. What's up?
I bought a new stove, and it's a Vonti. It's a 20-inch stove. It doesn't look like it's very well made. But I've run it twice to get rid of that new stove smell, and it's not going away. So I wondered whether there was something I could do. They tell you to do 45 minutes. I did an hour and a half both times, both the broiler and the oven. It's a broiler in oven model.
Yes.
Well, the only thing is that what I could do is, what I would do is, I would really scrub out the inside and all the other parts. And if you have a dishwasher machine, take all the loose parts and put them in.
I don't have a dishwasher machine.
But this is a brand new stove.
Yeah, even with brand new stoves.
But here's the thing.
Sometimes there's oil or something on the stove during manufacturing. And when you turn it on and you start cooking with it, these chemicals that they manufacture it with start to burn and dissolve, and that causes an odor. So sometimes just scrubbing them and washing them and then turn on the stove and everything else, you may reduce that kind of odor.
When now, scrubbing, you use a brush?
Yeah, well, okay, first of all, just basically wash it with a sponge, which has either
detergent.
Regular soap, regular dishwashing soap. Use a regular sponge, usually, you know, the one that has the scrub pad on the one side and the sponge on the other,
right.
And just clean it all up. Wash the inside around, and don't have to use a lot of soap, just mostly water. But also, when running this stove, make sure that you do have a smoke/ carbon monoxide detector in your house operating. Now, the thing about the smoke detector, that might actually pick up something, but in carbon monoxide, remember, is odorless, so you do want to make sure your carbon monoxide detector is working.
I don't have one right now. Is it dangerous?
Not because of the stove. It's dangerous not to have one, period.
But there's one last part of it. The bottom of the oven, there's one spot where it seems to have what looks like a residue of something, and it didn't come off with trying to wash it off.
Well, maybe at that location of where something, at that point you could probably use a little, like a steel wool pad or some sort of abrasive or even scouring powder, and just scrub that all off. In other words, any residue that is inside of an oven or burner or a top will start to melt, and that will cause odor.
Now, the one thing I want to say, I would try putting it through one more cycle, and if it doesn't go away, I would call up the manufacturer.
Thank you so much for your call. Let's go now to Peter from Queens. Hi, Peter.
Yes, hi. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Very good show.
Thanks.
I'm thinking of replacing the windows in my house. I have some, and, you know, there are just so many out there. I don't know what to look for.
Well, my feeling is that the best windows are generally aluminum. Aluminum double-glazed windows. It doesn't matter the thickness of the window, whether it's 1 inch or 3/4. And also the metal should have what is known as a thermal break all the way around, including the frame.
Why do you prefer aluminum over
because
wood?
Because they stay stable. They don't warp. They don't twist. They don't bend. They don't.
Against vinyl.
A vinyl is good, but if the window is on the south side of a building and you have a very, very cold day and all of a sudden the sun comes up on the vinyl, all of a sudden you find with a vinyl window it's twisted slightly because of the differential in temperatures that take place on that particular window. The vinyl windows seem to work very well on the north side of buildings, but on the south side of a building, they seem to distort after a couple of years, and that's the big problem.
Well, I'm not a big fan of vinyl windows, period, because they do change sizes over time because they do have such an incredible expansion-contraction coefficient. So sometimes the windows don't fit anymore, they stop locking and that sort of thing. The difference between, as Leonard, you said, why not wood, is wood tends to be very pricey. They tend to be very expensive windows, and the only people who are really putting in wood windows are people trying to do authentic restorations or people who have landmark commission issues with their buildings, such as, you know, in brownstones and townhouses and so on in historic districts. But the aluminum windows tend to be very good because, like Alvin said, they're very stable and they tend to keep their size. And if you get them with a thermal break all the way around, that will work well too. But one last thing I want to say is that before that, if sound penetration is an issue, they now make double glazed windows where the two pieces of glass are different thicknesses to reduce the sound penetration, because the frequency of the two pieces of glass will not transmit the sound as readily.
Now, Katie in Queens actually had her windows replaced. She writes, I rent an apartment. Some contractors came to replace some window frames. They seem to have put a bunch of plaster in the bathroom sink throughout the course of their repairs, and that sink won't drain. What's the best way to unclog the drain with plaster in it? My landlords are old and crazy. Well, that's a new situation.
As opposed to young and crazy, right? Or as opposed to just old and normal.
But she's saying that she obviously has to do it herself.
Right.
Well, the thing, most of that gook that they stupidly threw down the drain is usually settles in what they call the trap, or the pee trap that is underneath the sink. And if you take that off and you clean it all out, you probably your the malady that of the poor drainage system will go away.
Now, we have a lot of calls coming in, and we have no time. So, Larry, you invite people to write to you at larry@ubell.com.
Yes.
And they should include a phone number, you say?
Absolutely.
They should include a telephone number, and I will probably, if I'm not overly crazy, I will get back to you. I'll most likely give you a call to find out. But the one thing I want to say
but
is
be
that,
patient. He might not do it the first day.
Yeah, I might not do it the first. It might not even happen the first month. But the other thing I want to say is that a lot of these answers are on our website in Recipes for Home Repair, on our website, especially cleaning out traps and
absolutely
things like that.
All that stuff is on our website.
And meanwhile, we look forward to seeing you on January 11th. That's around a month away from now.
Where, again, we will go forth and show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.